This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show, I'm going to be talking about Jack Reacher, Never Go Back, Keeping Up with the Joneses, In a Valley of Violence, Fear Inc., and Miss Hokusai. I'm also going to be mentioning, quickly teasing, Boo, A Madea Halloween, and Ouija, Origin of Evil. More on that in a little bit. And I'll also be talking about news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and the home cinema roundup, plus a little bit of a contest you can catch later in the show. If you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. If you want to leave me a message, you can call 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
What's great about this week's news cycle, at least from my perspective, is there is no big contentious mess. Last week we had all the discussions of sexual impropriety with movie bloggers, and which kind of dovetailed into the presidential race. And unlike the presidential race right now, I'm going to be just talking about movies and fun things and nice escapist adventure. And even the news is all development stuff, so we're not having anything contentious or mean, which is kind of a nice relief, because you want to hear contentious debate and name-calling? Listen to anything else. Right here, we've got some niceties happening. The first piece of news that I think is interesting actually dropped last week, which I find kind of interesting, is the Fantastic Beasts series. It's been announced that there's going to be 5 movies to it. This is not a surprise. Now, I know that they did this book that J.K. Rowling's wrote, and if you recall, when the Harry Potter movies were made, they started making them before they were finished with the books. And in fact, there was a question, one of the books was delayed, and they were worried that she wasn't going to finish it. And I'm like, no, she'll finish it. She's contracted to do this. Now they've got all the movies involved, and there's billions of dollars. It's not just publishing a book and taking too long to do it. So they're going to be doing 5 movies, and that's because Warner Brothers is desperate to kickstart another franchise, because they had the Lord of the Rings, the Tolkien stuff from Lord of the Rings and then Hobbit, and then they also had Harry Potter, and both those dried up, and they're desperately trying to get something more than just the DC Cinematic Universe. So they're going back to the well with Harry Potter world with the Fantastic Beasts. So you're going to get 5 movies of that, which will be good. We'll see if those movies are any good coming next month. Another piece of development news. This is all in very early development, except for one. Paddington 2 is now filming, and they brought in Hugh Grant and Brendan Gleeson into the cast. And I don't know if any of you saw Paddington a couple years ago. That's such a charming movie. If you have missed that, check it out some night for family movie night with the kids. Enjoy it. It's an adorable little film about Paddington Bear. Now, I remember reading the Paddington Bear books when I was a little kid. They're picture books. And this captures that very British element to it. I'm welcoming a Paddington 2 screening. I remember I saw Paddington was like one of the last movies I saw that of the year. Because the way they schedule these screenings, I get all the early award films and I get screeners. So I end up being able to catch everything in December before Christmas. And then Christmas hits and I've seen everything. And I don't have to go see another movie until New Year's Day or so, after the new movies come out in January and they stink. But Paddington was one of the last films I saw of, what, 2014 or something like that. And it was such a charming little film. I enjoyed the heck out of it. So I'm looking forward to Paddington 2. I can't wait. A couple other films that are in the works, both good and bad. We'll start with the bad. Willy Wonka, they're looking at doing a prequel of that, which caused you could feel the groan across the internet and the groan across the movie blogosphere when that happened, because haven't we beat that dead horse? I mean, Gene Wilder just died, and it feels like sort of a Ghostbusters thing, where the Ghostbusters movie never really got off the ground until Harold Ramis passed away. And then they said, well, we can't use them anymore, so we'll go with a new cast. And it feels like now that they no longer have Gene Wilder to disapprove of the movie, they can go to an prequel. You know, yeah, they did the Johnny Depp remake 10 or so years ago, and that worked for what it was, but, you know, still, you know, let's leave that property alone. Also in the development news, you've got Captain Planet is a movie being developed by Leonardo DiCaprio. Now, a lot of people, of course, know Leonardo DiCaprio is a huge environmentalist, and that makes sense that he would spearhead a Captain Planet movie. The problem is, are environmentalist or not, Captain Planet is a stupid show. It's a ridiculous show. It doesn't even pretend to not be an indoctrination effort. If you go watch the original series, it's bad animation, it's corny writing, it simplifies everything. I remember they had one of the bad guys in one episode I saw, they had bad guys just breaking apart refrigerators in the Arctic so they could release the Freon into the atmosphere. I can't imagine how they're going to do a Captain Planet movie and either make it serious or goofy. And then finally, one piece I do like is they're going to be developing a Sky High 2 movie. Nobody remembers Sky High. That came out about 10 years ago about these kids going to high school as superheroes. I thought that was a hoot of a movie. I enjoyed the heck out of it. I took my kids. We had a blast. And it didn't do terribly well, so I never expected a sequel, but apparently they're going to do one. Hopefully it's not Sky High 2, The Dark Experiment, or something like that, where they always try and make movies darker in the sequel. They're going to do that with a Jurassic World sequel, which, you know, does it need to be darker? Just keep it the same. I enjoy a lighthearted movie now and then. Not everything needs to be dark. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Two Marvel movies are on the block, and they're from two different studios. You still have the last vestiges of Fox holding on to the X-Men franchise, and they've got Logan, which opens on March 3rd. This one is the R-rated Wolverine movie. Take a listen to the somber trailer.
Logan, what did you do?
Charles, the world is not the same as it was. Mutants. They're gone now.
Logan, you still have time.
Now, I've never read the Old Man Logan book, but I know where they're going with this. You can see them going to a much more grown-up, less of a goofy action-oriented film, but more of a character study of Wolverine. And that's great, because I thought the last Wolverine movie, although it was, I guess, true to the book series where he goes to Japan, I think that was a bit of a misfire. It just didn't quite work. And I'm kind of looking forward to a good, solid character study that doesn't just devolve into stupidity, which is what happened, I thought, with the Wolverine when that came out 3-4 years ago. Yeah, I think Logan looks like it could be a good movie. I just hope it doesn't get too heavy and morose. I hope it doesn't feel like a crazy grandpa on the couch talking to the TV while it's not on. The next one I want to talk about is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, one of my favorite movies from 2014. It's finally getting that sequel coming out, and here's the new trailer that just dropped this week.
There are two types of beings in the universe. Those who dance, and those who do not.
I get it, yes.
I am a dancer, Gamora is not.
You just need to find a woman who is pathetic. Like you.
Thanks, buddy.
Do you need a hug?
No, I do not.
Oh, I thought I said no. You're welcome.
Now, this one comes out May 5th. This is kicking off the summer, as opposed to the first Guardians of the Galaxy that wrapped up the summer. It was one of the first superhero movies in August that paved the way for a movie like Suicide Squad to do well in August. And they're putting it in that first segment, which is where Avengers always falls. This is an exciting movie for me because it looks like, it's even just from the brief bits of the trailer, it looks like it's got the same color palette. It's got the same vision. It doesn't look like they stepped up some sort of heavy duty production design. It looks like we're getting a continuation of it with James Gunn as the director. Same humor, just the bits you see. And of course you didn't see this because you're listening to it on the radio, but we get a little peek at little baby Groot involved in it as well. So I'm very much looking forward to. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 opening on May 5th. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Keeping Up with the Joneses and Fear Inc. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, rolling into the movie reviews. Let's jump right in. We got a bunch of them, and I was talking about this. I'm not actually going to review Boo, A Medea's Halloween, or Ouija, Origin of Evil, mainly because they didn't screen those. This was a weird week where the studios didn't screen anything. There's no confidence whatsoever in the films that are being released this week. Medea, I don't expect them to screen. They didn't screen Ouija. I didn't screen the original one. So I didn't get a chance to see him because they also didn't screen Jack Reacher Keeping Up with the Joneses. Those are the ones I chose to see. And I wanted to cover a couple smaller releases, including a horror movie. And since next week, all we've got is Inferno in the wide release, I'll talk about those movies next week after their performance in the box office, which should at least be acceptable. But this week, I'm going to be talking about Keeping Up with the Joneses. Let's kick off with that one. Zach Galifianakis and Ela Fisher play a boring suburban couple who discover their new neighbors are actually spies and get entangled in their mission.
Hey, honey.
Still spying on the neighbors?
Hi.
We're the Joneses.
You don't think there's something off about them?
They're both so overly accomplished and stylish.
Who are these people?
We need evidence.
I just want to make sure this is not paranoia.
What is this?
There's a missile.
That's me.
What is all this stuff?
The Joneses. They're not who they say they are.
Here's the thing about trust.
Once it's gone, bad things can happen.
First of all, we've seen this story before. We've seen the average person pulled into the world of spies before. I remember they did Fun with Dick and Jane with Jim Carrey and Taya Leone a couple years ago. You've got the Americans TV show. This is an old story. People I've heard compare this to Mr. and Mrs. Smith, even though this is more the people who live next door to Mr. and Mrs. Smith. It's nothing new. Part of the problem the movie has, and this you run into this with comedies. I remember I saw this with the movie Anger Management, not the Charlie Sheen show, but what it was based on, the one with Jack Nicholson and Adam Sandler, again, like 10 years ago. I remember going to see Anger Management and feeling like I just had to wait for an hour for the story to begin because the premise of Anger Management, you got it from the trailer. You had to get to Jack Nicholson being his anger management coach. And it took about an hour to get to that point in the movie. So everything just felt like an expanded trailer at that point. The trailer gives you all the setup. And I kind of felt that way with Keeping Up with the Joneses. I felt that it took about an hour before I said, okay, I know exactly, not only do I have an idea of where this is going, I know exactly where this is going because they tell you in the trailer that that's the premise of the movie. So the question, are they? Oh, wait, as they're trying to discover that they're spies? Well, we know they're spies. That's what the movie's being sold on. So it just felt pedantic in the beginning. There's some funny moments. It's great to see Ela Fisher back. I think she is a beautiful woman, and I think she's a comedic talent. She's married to Sacha Baron Cohen, and they, I believe, had a couple kids, so she probably took some time off. But it's great to see her back in the movies. I think she's fantastic, and she holds her own against the very broad, slapsticky comedy that Zach Galifianakis has. Zach Galifianakis looks like he's trying to regain his career a bit. I mean, Masterminds was an absolute freaking disaster, but it looks like, at least in this one, he's trying to capture what he once had. And I don't quite stick the landing on this one. But there's some cute moments between the two of them. Actually, the real comedic talent in this movie is John Hamm. John Hamm has always been very funny. He was funny in Bridesmaids. One of the few things I actually found funny in Bridesmaids. If you actually listen to his voice performance in Minions last year, he was a hoot in that. I think John Hamm has a great knack for comedy that is not fully explored. I want to see him do more, and he's doing more. I mean, he was an absolutely fabulous this summer, a hoot of a movie as well. So this film works with those comedic talents. It also puts a huge spotlight on what a terrible actress Gal Gadot is. She's beautiful. Yes, she's gorgeous. She's statuesque. She's got a great body, and she's got a porcelain-looking face, but she's just not a good actress. And this is always what I've been saying. This is what worries me about Wonder Woman. When you rest something on her shoulders, she's okay as a side actress when she's got three other people carrying the movie, but she's just not good. She doesn't have the talent for it. And that's the thing. She just doesn't, she has a very teeny weeny knack. Otherwise, she's just a pretty face on the screen. The movie has some funny moments. It's one of those films that you could swerve into on a Saturday matinee and enjoy, but it's going to be utterly forgettable. It's going to be one of those things you'd be like, oh yeah, that movie came out. At least it's better than Masterminds. But still, I mean, I'm going to say it kind of rocks simply because I'm being nice.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Fear, Inc. A diehard horror movie fan toys with a new experience in which people work to make a horror movie come to life for him and his loved ones.
I just want to be scared a little bit. I just want to shake in my boots.
This ain't scary enough, huh?
Sorry?
This dude told me about this company that create these custom scares for you.
If you ever want to be really scared, just call that number.
Hello?
Fear, Inc.? How do we get tickets?
Did you not hear a word we said? This company is dangerous, man.
What kind of company do you guys run? You made me kill my friends.
First of all, you're going to immediately see this movie, and if you've watched enough films, you're going to be like, oh, this reminds me of The Game, which was, they actually reference it in the movie. He actually has a line in there where he says, oh, this is like The Game, which is a movie came out in 1997, I think. Somewhere in the mid to late 90s with Michael Douglas, directed by David Fincher, where it's playing a cat and mouse game for this wealthy executive. It has that feel to it, only it's about horror movies. And there is a certain love of horror movies you get with this because they reference so many of them. Either The Shining or Freddy Krueger, obviously Friday the 13th, but even some more minor stuff that they do a pretty good job at. Little references to Scream or stuff that you're a casual viewer might miss, but somebody who really enjoys horror movies is going to catch. Now, the production's a little bit lower. It's still a professional production, but some of the writing of the characterization of, like, especially the main guy, the guy who's the horror movie fan who wants this experience, his characterization has a little bit to be desired. He's kind of a D-bag. And I guess that's part of it, is there's a journey there where he should be realizing that there's more to life than just goofy horror movies. But he's kind of a ne'er-do-well D-bag, and that's hard to get behind as a character. But, you know, I started watching, sometimes these small movies, it's on VOD right now, so you can catch it on, like, Amazon or iTunes. And sometimes with these movies that go direct to video, they're not very good. They're not very well constructed. And I'm not saying that this is a brilliant film, but being a horror movie fan myself and knowing a lot of the references to this, and then also the fact that it actually moves. There's a certain amount of guessing, and there's a game and a cat and mouse type thing going on with this film, that there's only so many twists you can do that will give you options, but at least I wasn't quite sure how many twists we were going to have and how often it would twist. Overall, I thought it was a relatively good movie. They've got a good stalking villain in the film, which is always a must have for a horror movie, especially somebody who's being attacked. It's definitely a fun movie and put you in that position of what if. And the other thing is knowing what happens in movies. Like, in particular, if you know your Saw movies, you can guess what's coming better than somebody who doesn't, for example. I respected that because it doesn't dumb down the horror movie trivia. And that works. So I'm going to have to say that Fear, Inc. kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Jack Reacher, Never Go Back, and In a Valley of Violence. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare.
In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, continuing with the movie reviews. Like I said, I'll be talking about Boo Madea's Halloween and Ouija next week, but I want to cover the big movies, especially Jack Reacher, which is, that's kind of the biggest movie of the weekend. I think that's one that's getting the most buzz. That's the one I'm asked about the most when I'm doing radio calls and talking to other radio hosts around the country. That's where I'm being asked, hey, what's going on with the Jack Reacher movie? What's funny is the first Jack Reacher that came out in 2013, kind of just flew under everybody's radar. Part of it is it came out right before Christmas. It was not a good release date for it. It just kind of got buried among all the other huge movies. And this one, they moved to an October timeframe, which I think is going to help it a lot more in the box office. There aren't as many options right now as there are in December for seeing the big blockbuster type movies. This is sort of in that garbage time where you've got, you know, smaller movies. Although it's still got to compete with stuff like Deepwater Horizon and The Accountant and Girl on the Train, which are the more grown up, adult film, not adult films. That's a bad thing to say, but the more grown up films. But the first movie I remember got horribly criticized because of the character of Jack Reacher is this massive guy, a very big, imposing wall of meat and muscle guy. And they chose Tom Cruise to play it. And it's clear the Tom Cruise control that's being exacted here. Tom Cruise likes to craft his movies around himself. And so he takes a property that he's not appropriate for, which he's done before with like Lestat in the vampire series back in the 90s, but he takes a movie that he's not ideal for and crafts it around it and changes it if he has to, which is totally what he did with Mission Impossible. Back when Brian De Palma was directing the first Mission Impossible, he made it a Tom Cruise movie then rather than a Mission Impossible movie. He just isn't Jack Reacher. And I remember people complaining about that. There's a scene in the original Jack Reacher where somebody says, is there somebody staying here who looks like he could kill this person with one punch? And they're like, yes, Tom Cruise. No one ever says that. It's like saying, that's like saying Woody Allen. Go get Woody Allen. He looks like he could do it. So you see all those remnants still in there. You see the remnants of Jack Reacher being this hard cut, mean dude who can beat the heck out of people. And it doesn't work with the character. But they just double down on it with this one where he stands in them. He's like in a scene where he's in the middle of a group of like four guys. He's like, I can beat you all up. And he does, but it's just a ludicrous casting. But still, let's talk about the movie. Well, I wanted to get that out of the way before I talk about the movie because that's your biggest obstacle. In Jack Reacher Never Go Back, Tom Cruise returns as an ex-military powerhouse Jack Reacher who helps his replacement clear herself of espionage charges.
There's a fight. One guy took them all down with his bare hands.
Aggravated assault is a felony in this state, Mr. Reacher. Process him and get him to county.
Jack Reacher for Major Turner.
Major Turner's been arrested.
On what charge?
Espionage.
He's been set up.
You think you're invulnerable.
That's right.
He's here to kill you.
My men were shot by one of our own.
This is bigger than I imagined.
What makes this movie work better than the first Jack Reacher, in my opinion, but also hobbles it at the same time, is it, like the Mission Impossible movies that are now trying to soften up Cruise's portrayal and the character that they're given by putting people with him. You had his team in Mission Impossible. Now you've got Colby Smulders, who plays his replacement. And, you know, we've seen her. She's an okay actor. She's very pretty, but she's been in How I Met Your Mother, where she's very funny, but she was, of course, surrounded by, she's a little more of the straight man in that series. And then she's in the Avengers movies and she works fine, but she's not a real, she doesn't pop really as a movie star. You could put anybody in that role. And they have her paired with him, which gives a little bit of dynamic. And then they have this 15-year-old girl character that's his daughter that he doesn't know he has, and they've paired her with them. And it's an obvious choice of trying to temper the character and make him more likable, because the character of Jack Reacher is kind of this hard-cut guy who is no-nonsense.
part of the problem with putting the 15-year-old girl in is you end up with a lot of these tropes where you got the girl, surly girl, I still want to text my friends, why are we doing this? I want to be able to express myself. So these kind of work against it. It works, it makes the character more likable and relatable, but it doesn't make the movie great. You can see them in the transitioning period that maybe if they did two more movies, you'd actually get a really good Jack Reacher movie, but they're still meddling with the formula because they're trying to shoehorn Cruise's character in there. Overall, it works as an espionage, as a sort of spy-ish thriller. There's some silly things to it. There's a lot of scenes of Tom Cruise and Kobe Smulders running. There's a whole sequence, about 20 minutes in the middle, where they're literally running from place to place to place. And you're like seriously thinking, do they not have a car? Or they can't steal a car? But it just has them running constantly, which gets to be absurd at a certain point. Very much like Keeping Up with the Joneses, it's the kind of film you could swerve into on a Saturday, or you can go check it out on a matinee, and you won't hate yourself for it, but it's going to be one that people are going to go, oh yeah, they made a Jack Reacher sequel. I remember that. That one was okay. You know, it's still not going to take off as a mega franchise. I think they're still a ways away from that, and I don't know if they can hone it like they did with the Mission Impossible movies, but ultimately, I'm going to have to say that Jack Reacher Never Go Back kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about In a Valley of Violence. Ty West directs this Western about a drifter caught up in a scuffle in a small town that turns into brutal revenge.
I am the marshal here in Denton, and I can't have people thinking this kind of business goes on around here. So you find yourself another town, far away from here.
I'm going to end it, and I'm going to prove to him what I am capable of.
No. You're making a mistake.
You should have never come up against me.
Y'all should have known better. This man is a military man, trained to kill.
We ain't going to wait here to die. We're going to take it to him.
This is sort of like a Western version of John Wick, where you have this guy who just wants to stay out of things. And he gets dragged into this, and he just wants to not be involved. And he ends up being pulled in to be involved. Ty West, who directed this and wrote it, is actually best known as a horror director. And he's quite good as a horror director. He did movies like The Innkeepers. He got his cut his teeth doing the second Cabin Fever movie. But Ty West, he's best known for horror, and so him doing a Western is kind of neat. And it's not a horror Western. It's not like Bone Tomahawk, which was a horror Western. Absolutely, it worked for what it was. But that's not the case in this movie. It works very much like a spaghetti Western, and it's a great sort of companion piece to watch with The Magnificent Seven, which is out in theaters right now. But not only does it have Ethan Hawke in it, he's in both movies, but it has a lighthearted tone to it. It has comedy to it, which is great to see in Westerns again. And that's something Ty West does. He has some very dry humor. While it can have some very funny moments and some contemporary feel to the dialogue, it still feels very authentically Western. Now, it's a much smaller budget than something like Magnificent Seven, but it works because it feels like that old-fashioned Western, and most of it takes place in this town or out in the desert. But it moves, and it has a great... Actually, the score is fantastic. That plays off of the spaghetti Western themes without cheapening them and copying them and being overly derivative. In a Valley of Violence is another one of the movies that we've seen recently that is a nice revival of Westerns. Westerns used to be wildly popular. They disappeared very much in the 80s and then you'd have like every now and then you'd have like Unforgiven come out or Silverado or one of these movies every couple of years and it would be a big one. Well, you're getting a lot more of these Westerns showing up in the limited release stuff, in the smaller movies. They had Diablo, about a year ago with Scott Eastwood, and that one was okay. But yeah, In the Valley of Violence works with its themes. It deals with pain and regret and machismo and when you should stand up and when you should back down and control. And it fits these Western tropes, you know, the lonesome stranger moving into town. It's obviously playing off of Clint Eastwood Westerns, but it also has its own knack. And that's one of the things that Ty West does with his horror movies is he makes his films nod to the genre and play with convention, but do something a little bit unique with it. And that's what you get with In a Valley of Violence, very much worth checking out. It's in limited release in theaters. You can catch it also on VOD, I believe. So it's definitely something to check out, especially if you're a Western fan. So In a Valley of Violence totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about a special contest from the Drive-In Horror Show, a review of Miss Hokusai, and box office predictions, as well as the home cinema roundup. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr finishing up the show with Fat Guys at the Movies, but don't go yet. We still have one more movie to talk about and a contest where you can actually win free stuff, which is always great. People love free stuff. So if you want some good free stuff, we got some of that coming up. Let's talk about that right now. This comes courtesy of the Drive-In Horror Show, which I reviewed a movie that they had of this a couple years ago. It's an anthology movie. You can go back and check some of my archives, but he also does Infinite Santa, which I've talked about before, a post-apocalyptic Santa, which is horror-themed. Very innovative stuff, but we have Michael here to talk about a new thing going on with his Drive-In Horror Show property. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
So tell me what's happening here. Of course, Drive-In Horror Show is an anthology movie that you did how many years ago? Two, three?
It came out in 2010.
2010. Okay, so about 6 years ago. But you have now online, people can read stories that are sort of like, were the stories deleted from the original? What's the actual online stories that you read now?
Sure. It's a bit of a mix. It's some stories that we wrote in the time since we made the movie, just that we thought could be in a sequel. Some of them just been developed for this particular short story project. We had kind of vault of scripts and other stories that we thought we could adapt into a short story fiction format.
And they're all available right now through Drive-In Horror Show. If you go to driveinhorrorshow.com.
Yep.
Just go to the top. There's a banner that says read on Wattpad. Wattpad is it's like a Kindle app. It allows you to read, correct?
Pretty much. You don't necessarily have to have a Kindle or a Kindle account. Everything's contained in the app. And yeah, it's free. People can read it on wattpad.com or the Wattpad app on iOS or Android.
So if you like horror fiction, go to driveinhorrorshow.com. So now you've got an interesting contest going on for people. If you want to win your own version of this and you want to get a special prize in association with these stories, tell me a little more about that.
We have made three limited edition printings of six of the stories that we have available on Wattpad. And these are part of grand prizes you can win by entering our contest. And the other prizes included are a signed Drive-In Horror Show soundtrack record, vinyl. We have a Drive-In Horror Show comic book, which is another story that exists only in the comic book. It's not in our Wattpad stories or the movie. And also some collectible pins. And each person that enters gets free trading cards. So no matter if you win the grand prize or not, you get something for free. Okay. And the trading cards are based on our covers that we had done for our stories. Each story, we had a custom cover done, so we made trading cards out of it, like those Fright Flicks cards, you know, that were out when we were kids.
What are the parameters? What do people have to do to enter?
So you can go to driveinhorrorshow.com, and there'll be a link at the top to enter the contest. And entering the contest is pretty easy. You can visit Drive-In Horror Show on Facebook. There'll be a button for that. You can follow Drive-In Horror Show on Twitter, if you haven't already. And the third option is kind of my favorite. You can click a button to tweet a message that essentially says, I've entered this contest, it's really cool. And you can do that option every day. It's supposed to be a fun thing to connect with people that like to read horror stories, you know, that like the old Stephen King stories, Clive Barker. That's the kind of vibe we're going for here.
Always like to have a little bit of horror there. And you said the contest is open until the 30th, right? That's the last time you're picking the winners.
Yep, you can enter up till midnight on the 30th, and then we're picking the three grand prize winners on Halloween.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Michael. So yeah, go to Drive-In Horror Show, enter that contest, get your trading cards, get your chance to win the book. It's always nice. They actually published a book and a vinyl record. That's awesome. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Miss Hokusai. This animated feature film tells the story of the daughter of one of Japan's greatest artists in the city of Edo in 1814.
In this city, there lives a crazy old man. He once painted a huge dharma on a huge sheet of paper. Then again, he also drew a pair of tiny sparrows on a grain of rice. Maybe you've heard of him. He's known as Hokusai the Painter. That crazy old man is my father.
It's released by GK Kids, which does a lot of more foreign and esoteric kids releases. They sometimes will do some of the Studio Ghibli pieces. They did Ernest and Celestine, which was nominated for an Oscar a couple years ago. But I do warn you, you don't want to just show this to your kids. In Japan, when they make animated films in Japan are very different than animated films here, because here, if you're going to make a movie that's just about people talking, you're just going to film it as a regular movie. You really don't get animated films like that in America. Now, Japan, they do that all the time. They make animated films that really aren't about fantasy or, like, I remember one of Hayao Miyazaki's final film, The Wind Rises, was about a maker of airplanes, and they had a couple fantasy type moments to it, but mostly it's just people. It's average people. And you see a lot of these showing up in Japan. There's a whole industry for that. And that's kind of what this is. Now, there are some distinct fantasy elements to this, and they do some fantastic, very beautiful animation, bringing in sort of a surreal world into this world of 1814. But essentially it's a biopic. It's about this girl whose father's a famous artist at the time. And she's essentially apprenticing under him. The movie is a charming look at the struggle she goes through to have her own freedom, the struggle she goes through to have her own career and to be herself. And like I said, with a warning, it does deal with some adult themes. It deals with the fact that in that time there were brothels that were very accepted at the time. And they talk about erotic art, which is a big thing that was drawn. And that's one of the things that she draws in her career. And it's not treated in a taboo way. But, you know, if you're going to show this to your five-year-old, you may have to explain what erotic art is. You may have to explain what a brothel is and what's actually happening. It's not graphic, but these themes are in there. So it's definitely not for like little kids. Plus, it's probably going to be a little boring for a five-year-old. It doesn't have animals talking in it. But for a more mature group, and I'm talking like teenagers can watch it and get it and look at it maturely. It's a beautifully animated movie. Gorgeous. It's eye popping at times. And it deals with, like I said, some themes of family and regret and wanting to chase your own dreams and how to balance that. So I'm going to say that Miss Hokusai totally rocks as a movie.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, I said that the accountant was going to make about $30 million. Now, I had a friend come in from out of town, so I didn't watch this very closely. It came in a little bit lower. It was about $25 million. And Kevin Hart's What Now came in just under 12. I guess $30 million for the accountant. It actually underperformed a little bit. And people were saying $9 million, and I said that Kevin Hart's movie is going to do better than $9 million. It actually did much better. It like I said, it did almost $12 million, which is great for a concert film. That's actually fantastic. Max Steel bombed, didn't even make it into the top 10, and then everything else kind of fit sort of that general decline of 40-50%. Not a stellar weekend of the box office. Your standard middle of October release cycle. Now this week, I think the winner is going to be Jack Reacher. It's got the most buzz. I think it's got the most appeal. It's, I think, actually going to overperform the previous film, but more because the release is a little more appropriate for the kind of movie it is. It's not a blockbuster. It would have gotten lost in December. Ouija, which we didn't talk about, but I'll talk about next week, I think it's actually going to do well. It's getting a lot of buzz, especially in the horror communities. I'm thinking it's going to be around $15 million. The first one made almost $20 million, but it kind of came out in a vacuum. And this is a much more competitive horror movie time in 2016. And I'm going to lowball Madea under 15 because there's been a steady decline of Madea box office, ending with the last movie, which they did that was a full-on Madea movie, which was Madea Christmas, which was like $16 million, I think, is what it opened with. So that was holiday-themed. You know, maybe it's going to get a bump, but I still think there's so many options out there that Madea isn't filling any sort of void right now. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's quickly go through the home cinema roundup. Alice Through the Looking Glass, the sequel to Alice in Wonderland. Not very good. Kind of an understated film. I mean, it's lavish and crazy, but it's really forced in trying to make a sequel to such a successful movie that was kind of a lightning in a bottle when it came out. Independence Day Resurgence, a little bit too little too late. I talked about the VOD version of it, and I mean, it's actually okay when you aren't pinning the hopes and dreams of a summer on it. It's rough to get through that first half, but once they're going after the aliens, it works. Then you've got the Marx Brothers, the Silver Screen Collection, which has like horse feathers and duck soup, so you can check that one out. And then Cafe Society, which is Woody Allen's latest film, now available on DVD and Blu-ray. That's it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Inferno, and plus a look back at Boo, A Madea Halloween, and Ouija Origin Evil. I will see you guys later, and until then, have a fat time at the movies.